This is RN. You're listening to Sunday Extra. More than 70 years after the liberation of Hitler's death camps in Europe, there are now more alleged Nazi war criminals facing charges than at any time in decades. The latest is 95-year-old Yaakov Pauli. He's been living quietly in the New York borough of Queens, but last week he was deported from the US, accused of being an armed guard at the Travniki camp in Poland. German prosecutors, according to an article in the Washington Post, say at least 23 alleged Nazi war criminals who worked in the death camps are currently facing charges in Germany and Austria. So what's behind this 11th-hour increase in cases? And what are the chances, given their extreme age, that any will be convicted or even tried? Well, Elizabeth Barry White is a senior historian at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. She was previously deputy director of the Office of Special Investigations, set up to investigate Nazi war criminals living in the US. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning.
You played a key role in identifying Yaakov Pauli as a potential war criminal. How did that come about?
In 1990, just as Czechoslovakia was transitioning from communism, some OSI historians were finally able to get into the archives there, which had troves of captured German records. And in one archive, I and another OSI historian found rosters that listed hundreds of men who had served as guards at the forced labor camps for Jews and the killing centers in Nazi-occupied southern Poland, where more than 1.5 million Jews were killed. And on one of these rosters was the name of Yaakov Pauli. From these rosters, we were able to go out to numerous other archives and collect troves of information about the activities of these men. And amongst the evidence we found was that Pauli had served at a Nazi camp in Travniki, Poland, and our evidence showed that he had been a guard at a forced labor camp for Jews in Travniki. And at the time when, in November 1943, in a single day, all 6,000 men, women, and children, prisoners at Travniki, were shot to death.
Wow. And you found him, you tracked him down to New York, then what happened?
Well, then my office was the Office of Special Investigations, brought a case against him to take away his U.S. citizenship on the grounds that he had obtained it by lying about his past and that he was ineligible for it because he had assisted in persecuting Nazi victims. And then once we won the denaturalization, then we had to win an order of removal or deportation against him. And we did that in 2004, I believe. But it has taken this long to find a country that was willing to take him.
So what? How has he been living? What happens? Is he formally on a charge in the United States? Does he live on bail or does he just simply go about his life?
No, they just go about their lives. Unfortunately, this has happened with a number of people who were ordered deported following prosecution by OSI, and they managed to live out their lives in peace here in the United States.
So now he's being deported to Germany. Should this be seen as an extradition to face charges, or are charges in the end unlikely?
Well, that's up to the German prosecutors. His removal was not an extradition. So he was not sent there to stand charges. As I understand it, the prosecutors are doubtful that they'll be able to bring charges against him.
Is that typical of the rest? Because, you know, there is talk of a couple of dozen people who have been identified and are in this sort of legal twilight zone between being essentially accused war criminals and any kind of process to bring them to justice.
Yes, there are a number of cases in Germany right now where the central office that's responsible for investigating Nazi crimes has referred them for prosecution. And these are cases that of people who served as guards, mostly at more notorious camps such as Auschwitz and I know Buchenwald, Ravensbrück, which was a concentration camp for women. I believe they referred some cases involving that camp.
Now, in the early decades after the war ended, there seemed to be a view that low-level guards were not the target, that there was a pursuit of high-end war criminals. Why has there been, in these really the last years in which anything can be done, a focus on really identifying those low-level guards as actual war criminals?
Well, in Germany, there were some court rulings in the late 1960s that led the German prosecutors to conclude that they could only charge a Nazi criminal if they had evidence showing that he was directly involved in a specific act of murder, which is very difficult to do, especially so many years after the act was committed. But they were able to do it in some cases. It's easier to do with higher-level people. And so by early in this century, those cases were pretty much dying out. And it was assumed that they wouldn't be able to make those kinds of cases against the lower-level people. But then they got some fresh blood at the central office in the form of two investigative judges who came in 2008 to Washington to meet with my old office and to go over some of the cases that we had been bringing against people living in the United States who had persecuted Nazi victims. And they became particularly interested in the case of John Demjanjuk, who had been a guard at the Sobibor killing center. And they realized that with a place like Sobibor, which operated solely for the purpose of murdering large numbers of people, anybody who helped in the operation necessarily assisted in the murder. And so under German law, could potentially be charged as an accessory to murder. So that's what they decided to do. It was risky. There was a lot of doubt about it, but Germany extradited Demjanjuk, and he was convicted as an accessory to the murder of 28,000 victims at Sobibor. And that is what kind of opened up this whole new avenue of investigations for the Germans.
This is RN Sunday Extra. You're listening to Elizabeth Barry White, senior historian at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum and former deputy director of the Office of Special Investigations that tried to track down those Nazi war criminals in Germany. If I was to return to Jakob Pauly, has he admitted any guilt? Did he try to defend himself? Has he indicated any remorse at all?
Admitted that he served at Travniki, but he claimed that he never harmed anyone.
Is that credible?
Well, the basis of our case was that as a guard at Travniki, his duties involved persecuting the prisoners there. And he also, as the judge ruled, through his duties, prevented those prisoners from escaping their murder. And so he was determined to have assisted in the persecution of Nazi victims.
So in other words, if he simply did his job as directed by the Nazi authorities and prevented people escaping, for example, he was therefore, it followed, a war criminal.
He was a persecutor, yes.
Yes. How many of these war criminals, of these guards and from high to low level, left Europe, and how many has it been estimated might have arrived in Australia? There are various views on that, but we certainly haven't been particularly effective, if there have been any here, in tracking them down.
Well, I have no way of knowing that. I know that in the case of the United States, the people who came here who had been involved in perpetrating Nazi crimes were largely non-Germans or people who came from countries other than Germany. And that's because most of the murders in the Holocaust happened in Eastern Europe, and the Nazis used lots and lots of local non-Germans to help them carry out those murders. But the documentation about those acts was captured by the Red Army at the end of the war and put in archives that historians in the West couldn't access. So it was people who perpetrated crimes in Eastern Europe and managed to flee to the West could then lie about what they had done because the evidence was not available and pass themselves off as refugees, even Nazi victims. And they were able to come to the United States because of special refugee programs that we put in place to help relieve Europe of its displaced persons population.
There's the only case under the Australian War Crimes Act was a prosecution against Ivan Polyakovich in Adelaide. 25 years ago, he was found not guilty of helping in a massacre of 800 people. So that was as far as it went here. I wonder, when you talk about how the death tolls, the camps, the slaughter of the Jews and others chiefly existed in Eastern Europe, when you look to the far east of Germany this very week, in the city of Chemnitz, there is new neo-Nazi activity. What do you feel when you see those images?
Oh, it's certainly very disturbing, and it feels like sometimes I despair that we'll ever really learn, but on the other hand, I know that there are many, many Germans who are absolutely opposed to this kind of activity and who accept that they in particular need to be vigilant against the evils of racism because it can lead to genocide.
A lot of that, a lot of the killing, a lot of the intellectual thought behind the genocide emerged out of a kind of a Prussian East Germany between the wars. And this was the group under communist East Germany that probably less than the West really made an effort to come to terms with that history. Do you agree with that analysis there, that there may be a problem simply that the right degree of self-awareness is not there?
Well, I think that the Germans have gone through a lot of reckoning in the past 20 years with their past and have embraced that they need to accept responsibility as a nation for what happened and to preserve the memory of what was done and to be vigilant against allowing it to happen again.
So how do you account for the scenes that we see there?
Germans have done more than any other country to try to face the evils in their past.
So how do you account for the scenes that we see?
I think that, you know, you see at times that it really comes down to who you define as being part of us, and especially people who feel marginalized, feel like they're losing out, and they see people that they don't feel belong amongst them. They strike out at that.
As an historian, what do you say about this seemingly endless fascination? It's on the fringes for sure, but we see it right at the fringes of Australian society. It's plainly there in Germany. It's in parts of Britain. It's seeing it turning up in parts of the United States. How do you explain that apparently, you know, irreducible fascination by some with this appalling, annihilating spirit that lay at the heart of the Nazis?
It's very difficult for me to explain. I know it's unfortunately a natural part of human nature to divide the world between us and them. And I grew up in the segregated South, so I grew up with this experience of a racist society where most people who considered themselves good, kind, Christian, patriotic Americans went along with a system that was clearly cruel and contrary to their supposed values. So this is an age-old problem of human nature. We're capable of great self-sacrifice for the good of others, but that same capability can also turn us into people who commit genocide.
Endless vigilance, it seems. Elizabeth Barry White, historian and former deputy director of the Office of Special Investigations of the United States, tasked with tracking down war criminals. So good to talk to you today.
No, thank you.